Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So tomorrow it officially ends for the Hillary Clinton campaign. WNYC AM 820 will bring you her exit speech live, expected around noon tomorrow. I'll be here hosting along with WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein in D.C. at the site of the speech around noon tomorrow. They still haven't announced the exact time, but we expect it around noon tomorrow on AM 820. Right now, for all this campaign has meant to Clinton supporters, and for all it has been a lightning rod, let's take some time to debrief with WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein and to hear some clips from the entire road to what she hoped would be the presidency that Hillary Clinton has traveled from the year 2000 through today. Good morning, political director.
Good morning.
Before we get into these clips, I just want to acknowledge to everyone the importance of the Clinton campaign to her supporters and how much of the media, I think, was taken aback with the breadth and the genuineness of that support. You know, I think the Washington Press Corps and National Press Corps generally were so cynical about the Clintons, and sometimes for good reason, but so cynical about the Clintons' shameless style of politics that they missed the deeper meaning of Hillary to countless millions of people who really found her inspirational, and countless more who simply felt that she spoke up for them more than any other politician did. So I just want to acknowledge that connection and that emotion and that expression of democracy through this primary season, which I think sometimes gets missed in the hardball political analysis through this year. Want to agree or disagree or add to any of that?
Well, you know, it is interesting because the press corps is certainly not, doesn't get love from Hillary Clinton. And what's amazing is when you see her on the rope lines, how much the people do get love. And this, there is this incredible sense of sort of, you know, Hillary Clinton is, you know, someone we can believe in. She's someone who can get things done. And, you know, we're going to sort of hear it in all of our audio tour. But there is, you know, she's such a complex character because, you know, she did do and say all of these things. And, you know, I do think that both Clintons believe in a certain style of politics where you have, you know, what they believe is the right agenda for the American people, and that to win, to get in the positions of power where you can do those things, almost anything is acceptable.
And we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about some of the list of what those things were during the campaign, and they were there. And I think as we begin to look back, though, that the cynical media dismissal of Hillary Clinton as a careerist powermonger and therefore underestimated goes all the way back to her first run for the Senate from New York in 2000, in which she defeated a George Pataki clone, I'll call him, handpicked by the state Republican leadership, who in the media took her original listening tour seriously. Remember the listening tour? Rather than dismiss it as a gimmick. But the voter she came in contact with in upstate New York, and I personally know some upstate Adirondack Republicans for whom this was true, and she spent most of that campaign upstate, and they felt listened to.
They did. Nobody goes to those counties, and no New York politician had ever gone to some of these tiny counties like Essex County and the Adirondacks, where, you know, there just aren't a lot of Democratic voters. Not that many voters, period, compared to, say, New York City. I mean, the sort of typical pattern for a New York politician is to spend a lot of time in the five boroughs, the suburbs, Buffalo, Rochester, Albany, and Syracuse. And she went to every single county in New York, and just coming made people feel happy. I mean, there was also this sense of connection in that campaign because, you know, parts of upstate New York are closer in philosophy and values to the Midwest, where she's from originally, than they are to New York City. And mm-hmm. There was that connection also that was established. And it's something that was fierce and heartfelt, even at the same time that there were other people who sort of felt very cynical about Hillary Clinton.
So let's start our audio tour of the Hillary Clinton electoral politics era there in 2000. What you got?
Well, the first clip is a clip from the debate with Rick Lazio. And let's remind people that in 2000, when Hillary Clinton ran for Senate, she ran first against Rudy Giuliani, who dropped out after marital problems and a diagnosis of prostate cancer. And Rick Lazio stepped in relatively at the last minute.
That's fair. And I should have mentioned that it was originally going to be the Battle of the Titans.
Right. And he was a congressman from Long Island. And I actually have downstairs, we're moving in a couple weeks, and I have a keychain from Lazio's campaign. It says 100% New York, and it's a map of New York State. And that was essentially his campaign. She's a carpetbagger. I'm New York. And this particular...
Are you going to sell it at our stoop sale next week, or are you going to keep this one?
I might keep it as a memento. But, I mean, this particular debate clip in some ways foreshadowed a lot of what happened in the presidential campaign, because there had been a debate going on about the use of outside sources of income, money from independent groups, mostly Hillary Clinton haters who were running ads on the side of Lazio, and money from the Democratic Party, so-called soft money, which was coming in, which was allowed at that time, in favor of the Hillary Clinton campaign. And there was a very famous moment in Buffalo in the summer of 2000 when Rick Lazio approached Hillary Clinton at the podium. The debate was moderated by Tim Russert, and this is what happened.
Let's just get this deal done right now.
I'll give Mrs. Clinton.
Right here. Here it is. Let's sign it. This is the New York Freedom from Soft Money Pact. I signed it. We can both sit down together. We can all get all the media in here.
Ms. Clinton, you want to respond?
Well, yes, I certainly do. You know, I admire that. That was a wonderful performance. And
well, why don't you sign it?
And you did it very well.
I'm not asking you to admire it. I'm asking you to sign it.
And what was so interesting is everybody, I think, you know, we were all sitting around a smaller press corps, but still a fairly large press corps at the time at that debate. And people were thinking like, wow, Lazio really got her. And the opposite happened. It turned out to be a point in the campaign where things started to really turn for Hillary Clinton. And there was a feeling, particularly among women, that he had invaded her space. He had been too aggressive. And it was an over-the-top attack, was the feeling among the electorate. And she started to gather strength from that point in the campaign and ended up winning quite handily against the 100% New York candidate.
And today, who remembers Rick Lazio?
Today, he is has left the political scene.
So she's in the Senate. It's October 10th, 2002. And this is one of the pivotal moments of her career. Probably had a lot to do with why she lost the nomination to Barack Obama, although I have a theory, not as much as we may think, but we'll get to that. Want to set up this clip?
Yes, this is. Now, let's, of course, remember Hillary Clinton took office January 1st, 2001, which was, of course, 9 months before the tragic events of September 11th. And she was the junior senator from New York at the time. And New Yorkers felt, I mean, the entire nation felt under attack, but New Yorkers felt particularly vulnerable. It's very interesting because there was a poll taken not so long after September 11th, in which 40% of New Yorkers said they personally knew someone who had died in the attack, which was very different from the national scene. And so as the senator from New York, she was both the senator from a progressive anti-war constituency and representing a constituency that had felt very vulnerable from the 9/11 attacks. And, you know, there's been a lot of sort of talk in hindsight about, you know, who knew what when and whether Hillary Clinton and the members of the U.S. Senate knew now what they knew then. But to be fair, there was also a lot of protest and a lot of skepticism at the time about weapons of mass destruction. There was some pressure on Hillary Clinton to vote against the Iraq War, but it was still at the time, mostly favorably viewed in New York as elsewhere in the country. And here is her speech from that time.
If we get the resolution that President Bush seeks, and if Sodom complies, disarmament can proceed and the threat can be eliminated. Regime change will, of course, take longer, but we must still work for it, nurturing all reasonable forces of opposition. If we get the resolution and Saddam does not comply, then we can attack him with far more support and legitimacy than we would have otherwise. This is a very difficult vote. This is probably the hardest decision I've ever had to make. Any vote that might lead to war should be hard. But I cast it with conviction.
So another thing that people don't remember so much is how she articulated that this is the hardest decision probably that she ever had to make.
I think people, it's true, people don't remember that. She did say that. But, you know, it was an unequivocal vote. I mean, it was the same vote as the senior senator from New York, Charles Schumer. It was something that was supported at the time by many members of Congress in New York. So it wasn't so out of step, but it was unpopular with the progressive activist wing of the Democratic Party. And it's certainly, that is certainly a wing of the party that she has had some trouble with in this campaign.
So here's my theory. Much bigger than her vote for the war was her refusal to say it was a mistake. Now, we know Barack Obama was opposing the war at the time, but he was in the Illinois Senate. John Edwards said his vote for the war, which he cast, was a mistake during the campaign, and almost no Democrats seemed to hold it against them.
Right. In fact, I mean, you know, it's interesting about Barack Obama. He was a state senator from Illinois. He did make a speech against the war, but he was such an unimportant figure at the time that no audio recording, full audio recording exists of the speech. And for his campaign, he actually reread it and I think posted it on his website. And, you know, whereas, of course, a lot of people were paying attention to the Hillary Clinton speech. And here's an example of sort of the Rorschach test that is Hillary Clinton. Her supporters felt like she was making, some of her supporters felt like she was making the right decision, that it was a principled decision. And her antagonists felt like she was making this decision as a calculated political decision because she was thinking about possibly one day running for president.
The next clip comes from December 2003 when Hillary Clinton called in as a caller to this show. Let me set this up, because why did Hillary Clinton call into this show? Well, because she was making the rounds that week about 9 months after the war started, still trying to shore up her hawkish credentials. She had done the Sunday talk shows the day before. This was a Monday. And she happened to be listening when we got a caller who said she really hated the military because she made the White House detail work out of uniform during her time as First Lady. And she took the opportunity to call in to refute it to get some more press around her talking point. So I want to talk after the clip about the timing of that. But here's a little bit of Hillary Clinton as a caller to the Brian Lehrer Show, early December, I think it was December 1st in 2003. Guess what? After a half hour of talking about Senator Hillary Clinton, she's calling in. So let's welcome her. Senator Clinton, are you there?
I am there, Brian. How are you?
I'm okay. Thank you for calling. Were you listening?
I always listen whenever I can, and I was listening, and I want to say hello to Jody Allen as well as you.
So, Senator Clinton, if you do run for president in 2008, you've got a nice little blurb to use now from William Safire's column in the New York Times this morning, in which he called you a congenital hawk, as I'm sure you know, for the things that you said on some of the talk shows yesterday, clearly supporting presidential power to make decisions such as President Bush made to go to Iraq, even though you think he didn't use the power well. You want to respond to William Safire?
Well, I don't know what to say. I'm a little worried because I assume he considers that a favorable comment, and that, you know, gives me some pause. But I think that the fact is we are in a terrible dilemma, mostly of the Bush administration's making, some of which, however, is as a result of the adversaries that we confront in the global war on terrorism. It's not an easy set of decisions to make. But as I have been saying ever since I voted for the resolution, I do think that in a time like this, it is important to give authority, and then you have to hope that the authority is used appropriately.
So, again, early December 2003, the war had started, you know, in March of that year. Opposition among the Democrats was already fierce. There was already the Joseph Wilson op-ed. There was already the notion around that there were no WMDs in Iraq, but she was out reinforcing her hawkish credentials, leading William Safire to write that column that morning on which she called in, And how do you look back on that moment?
Well, there's a absolutely. She was still trying to work on her military credentials. A week after that event, she spoke to the Council on Foreign Relations. I was there, you know, very much assertive, kind of a hawkish version of U.S. Foreign policy. But the sort of backstory of this is that Hillary Clinton at this time was showering attention on New York and the New York media. And everybody had sort of thought that she was going to sort of go off and be this kind of highfalutin senator. And it turned out that she was an incredibly hardworking senator. And it's not something that has been so noted in this campaign, but she would pay attention to the nitty gritty. One of the big issues that she worked on as a senator was firefighter health for 9/11 rescue workers. And the firefighters, who pretty much hated Hillary Clinton in 2000 and campaigned against her, were sort of won over. And she started doing all of these micro-level ways of trying to pay attention to her constituents and to the media. I mean, there were daily conference calls. People would call up and say, do you want to talk about Senator Clinton, about this policy initiative, every day? And it became almost too much. And there was, this was in the context of that, sort of, you know, her listening to the show. You know, I've heard her say that she's a big listener of public radio on other occasions. So, you know, I take her to word that she was listening in Chappaqua. But she was not only sort of trying to enhance her kind of foreign policy role, but at the same time, batten down the hatches as a New York senator.
And I'm glad to say that she felt comfortable enough that she would get a fair shake as a caller to this show, the journalistic questioning, to be sure, but not the mindless vilifying or mocking that some others tend to do. Okay, we'll continue with our audio tour of the Hillary Clinton campaign as she plans to drop out. And we now know the exact time. It just came out from her camp. It is noon tomorrow. And I will be here, Andrew Bernstein will be here to bring you that speech on AM 820 WNYC at, I guess, probably a few minutes before noon tomorrow. But when we continue this audio tour of the Clinton campaign, we will play clips from the campaign itself, including some of the worst moments, including the moment when Elliot Spitzer inadvertently helped to sink her chances. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein. Hillary Clinton dropping out at noon tomorrow officially. We will carry her speech, as I mentioned, on AM 820 WNYC. Don't worry, we won't interrupt Jonathan Schwartz. He'll be on FM at noon. Andrea and I will be here on AM 820 and WNYC.org to anchor the coverage. But this is an audio tour of the campaign, of highlights, lowlights from the Clinton campaign. Here's a moment from the famous CNN YouTube debate July 23rd of last year. It's probably more of a moment for Obama than Clinton in the long run, but it was defining. Let's listen.
I would. And the reason is this, that the notion that somehow not talking to countries is punishment to them, which has been the guiding diplomatic principle of this administration.
This is I didn't set this up enough. This is when they were asked if they would negotiate with leaders of enemy countries directly and with no preconditions. Obviously an issue to this day. Obama speaks first.
I would. And the reason is this, that the notion that somehow not talking to countries is punishment to them, which has been the guiding diplomatic principle of this administration, is ridiculous.
Well, I will not promise to meet with the leaders of these countries during my first year. I will promise a very vigorous diplomatic effort, because I think it is not that you promise a meeting at that high a level before you know what the intentions are. I don't want to be used for propaganda purposes.
So, Andrea, the punditry still debating whether that was a naive slip-up on Obama's part that he's been digging himself out from ever since, or whether that was just his, you know, pre-thought-out, principled position, and he and Clinton disagreed.
Right. And, I mean, I think one of the things that's important to remember is that, you know, Hillary Clinton was not, I mean, she was the front-runner, you know, she had a lot of strength in the fall of 2007, but she wasn't always the front runner in the race. I mean, she came in, people had a lot of doubts about the first woman, the polarizing Clinton presidency. John Edwards was still seen as a very, very strong candidate at that time. And there were all of these early debates. And I think this one may have been the fifth or the sixth or the seventh. But Hillary Clinton, each time there was a debate, gained strength as a candidate. And, you know, she is somebody who thinks a lot about policy details and who can speak about them comfortably in a debate format. And she really came, you know, she each time she said these things, she sort of showed off her experience. And it worked to her advantage for a long time. And after this debate, the Clinton campaign sort of pounced on Obama. And they said, you know, he's naive. He's not experienced enough. He doesn't realize that, you know, you can't just sit down with no preconditions with a foreign leader. And there was a sort of a lot of debate about, you know, to this day, whether that's what Barack Obama meant. He says, no, he didn't mean no preconditions. He just meant, no, you know, I'm not going to stand for no negotiations. But this was, you know, really a way that she gathered strength early on and did become, in the fall of 2007, the front runner in the campaign.
Continuing chronologically, the January 31st debate in Los Angeles. This is the issue. I think we're not going to hear Clinton's most uncomfortable moment on this, but we found a moment on this, an issue on which Elliot Spitzer inadvertently helped sink the Clinton campaign. Set this up.
Elliot Spitzer, the former governor of New York State, in the fall announced that he was going to allow driver's licenses for illegal immigrants. Now, this is something that was supported by policy wonks who saw it as a good way to bring these people onto the books so that they could get insurance, so that they would have to pay if people were hit or in accidents with them. But it was a red-hot issue, particularly on right-wing talk radio, and Elliot Spitzer was hammered for it. And there was a debate in November of in Philadelphia, 2007, where Hillary Clinton said, you know, she basically, it wasn't clear whether she supported it or she was against it. It sounded like she supported it. She later coalesced her position, and this is what she said.
Well, we disagree on this. I do not think that it is either appropriate to give a driver's license to someone who is here undocumented, putting them, frankly, at risk, because that is clear evidence that they are not here legally. And I believe it is a diversion from what should be the focus at creating a political coalition with the courage to stand up and change the immigration system.
Yeah, the only point I would make is Senator Clinton, you know, gave a number of different answers over the course of 6 weeks on this issue, and that did appear political. Now, you know, at this point, she's got a clear position, but it took a while. And, I'm just being, just in fairness, initially in a debate you said you were for it, then you said you were against it, and the only reason I bring that up is to underscore the fact that this is a difficult political issue.
And that landed, because the perception was already around the war that she took a position that was political that she may not have believed in, and here it was again. At the hands of Elliot Spitzer.
Exactly.
Indirectly.
I mean, you know, it was called at the moment one of the worst weeks of her campaign, and it certainly became a slide out of front-runner status into whatever competitive status she remained for the rest of the primary season.
Here, and I think it needs no further introduction, is a pivotal moment in the Clinton campaign, one of her red-hot moments.
It's 3 a.m. and your children are safe and asleep. But there's a phone in the White House and it's ringing. Something's happening in the world. Your vote will decide who answers that call. Whether it's someone who already knows the world's leaders, knows the military, someone tested and ready to lead in a dangerous world. It's 3 a.m. and your children are safe and asleep. Who do you want answering the phone?
I'm Hillary Clinton and I approve this message.
So apparently did the voters of Texas and Ohio.
Remember that red telephone ad debut just a few days before the primary. I think it was Friday or the Saturday before that Texas and Ohio
primary.
Everybody
thought Hillary Clinton was toast. Barack Obama had just won 11 victories in a row, including Wisconsin and Maine, which were seen as states that were sort of gettable for Hillary Clinton, particularly in Wisconsin, which was the set of primaries or during the set of primaries right before Texas and Ohio. He seemed to be getting into those working class voters, women, some of Hillary Clinton's constituencies. And there was this sense that it was going to end for her on March 4th. And she ran that ad. There was this sense of, you know, she's the candidate with experience. I mean, there was this repeated pattern when Barack Obama seemed to be getting ahead of steam. And then there was this pulling back on the part of the Democratic primary. And this next clip is from.
Well, wait, before we get to the next clip, you know, I want to acknowledge that I was wrong as a political analyst on this show and elsewhere that weekend when I heard the red telephone ad. Just as a matter of political analysis, I thought, well, what is she doing? She's pulling out the experience versus inexperience card again. And this is exactly what's been sinking her in all these primaries, because Democratic primary voters are choosing his being right on Iraq in many of their point of view versus her experience, which was almost being seen as a negative. And here she was playing the experience card again. And the fear card, Democrats
very much
react negatively to when Republicans do it, and for whatever reason, it worked. Okay, so now...
So we were here on March 4th, and we were preparing for that to possibly be the last night of Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. That was, what, 3 months ago?
Yeah.
And guess what? She won.
For everyone here in Ohio and across America who's ever been counted out but refused to be knocked out, and for everyone who has stumbled but stood right back up, and for everyone who works hard and never gives up, this one is for you.
And there it is. That is the essence of Hillary Clinton's appeal among the so-called white working class Americans, the sense of when you are down and out, you cannot be knocked out of the arena. And that is the connection that she made with voters 6 weeks later in Ohio, in Kentucky, and West Virginia. And especially as the economy got worse, as people felt under more and more pressure, there was a certain segment of voters who felt like, you know, Hillary Clinton is proof that no matter what you're faced with, you can live through it.
6 weeks later in Pennsylvania and then Indiana and so forth. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein. For another few minutes, we have another couple of clips to play on our audio tour of the Clinton campaign, as she'll be formally dropping out tomorrow. And this campaign did have the shameless side of both Clintons very much on display, the side that would have them do anything to win. And we know them all now: South Carolina, Bosnia, RFK, hardworking white Americans, two people who love this country, meaning her and McCain, impugning Obama's patriotism by implication. He's not a Muslim as far as I know, and the rest. I mean, that's why people get cynical about her, right?
It is. And I think, I mean, particularly to Obama supporters, they, every time they hear this, I mean, it's just insult upon injury upon insult. I mean, it's this sense of, you know, how can she be saying these things and playing into what they feel is going to be the Republican campaign against Barack Obama.
And here's one in, and we could have picked, you know, any of a number, but in an interview with USA Today on May 6th, citing an AP report on the demographic breakdown of the voting.
Senator Obama's support among working hardworking Americans, white Americans, is weakening again, and how the, you know, whites in both states who had not completed college were supporting me.
Now, what Hillary Clinton says is, you know, she was just reading the exit polls. She was just saying the same things that we say. But, of course, it didn't sound like that at all. It basically sounded like she was saying, I'm the white people's candidate.
And the question is, or a question is, and various of us in our office have debated this with various opinions. Was she just unbelievably tired, as they both were by then, and stumbled into a demographic analysis in a clunky way that no candidate would usually articulate in that way? Or, you know, was she really trying to press some buttons in a desperation strategy?
Right. And the Saturday Night Live take on this was Hillary Clinton. And, you know, Saturday Night Live, I mean, we didn't talk about Saturday Night Live.
That was a very pro-Hillary moment.
They, let's not forget, there was a writer's strike. They were off the air for a very long time. And shortly before the Ohio-Texas primary, Saturday Night Live came back, and they had these very funny skits poking their, which were basically sticking a poker at us, the media, saying that the media, we were too fawning about Barack Obama, and we gave Hillary Clinton a very hard time. And I would argue that those skits certainly, you know, sort of played a role in the sort of soul searching that went on among some reporters in this race. And that, but, you know, then sort of, you know, at the after Indiana, they did another skit where they had sort of a play on this saying, you know, Hillary Clinton saying, well, I, you know, should be the Democratic nominee because my supporters are racist and they will never vote for Barack Obama. And it certainly, you know, is surprising from a candidate as smart and usually as cautious as Hillary Clinton to be sort of saying these kinds of things outright. And then later, of course, with the infamous RFK remark.
So as we move toward the end of this, how much did Barack Obama defeat Hillary Clinton, and how much did she defeat herself? And this is not an either-or question, you know, but is there a balance here worth exploring? The Chicago Tribune has an article this week, Five Reasons Obama Won and Five Reasons Clinton Lost. And the five he won are...
That's his hometown paper, we should point out.
Fair enough. He owned the word change. He opposed the Iraq War when others were equivocal. His oratory was electrifying. His campaign was better strategically. And he won the internet. Then the five reasons Clinton lost. Her campaign was too corporate and hierarchical. She didn't recognize the Obama threat. She invested heavily in Iowa, then lost to Obama there. She had no coherent post-Super Tuesday plan. And she failed to connect with African-American voters, a Democrat that had always been a Democratic demographic that had always been in her base. Pretty much agree?
I think that all of those things were true. I mean, I think that there's an important, you know, I've been hearing sort of out in the streets a lot of, you know, there's sort of like two things going on. One is denial that Hillary Clinton is actually going to drop out. There are people who think, I just don't believe it. I don't believe it, Hillary Clinton supporters.
Today?
Within the last couple of days. And then there are people who are, why didn't she drop out on Tuesday? I'm so angry at her. It was so ungracious of her. And I think that the, you know, thing to be said about Hillary Clinton is she ran a very, very good campaign. She raised a lot of money. She electrified a lot of voters. Barack Obama ran a better campaign, raised more money, and electrified more voters.
And a few other media takes. Let's see, this one. I didn't note the source. I think this is Huffington Post. Obama out-communicated Clinton using one consistent message. This says, Obama's message has been consistent from day one. Clinton lurched from experienced insider to populist outsider, from Margaret Thatcher-like Iron Lady to a victim being bullied.
It's so interesting because I was listening to her speech that she made on January 2nd, the night before the Iowa primary, and it was a pretty clunky speech. And I thought to myself, what a better candidate Hillary Clinton became in the course of these primaries. I mean, I do think there is an argument to be made that she found her voice. And I think that, you know, she... But she didn't have a consistent, you know, Obama's tags, press tags from, you know, as early as I started covering this campaign said, change you can believe in. And I think that there were maybe 15 Hillary Clinton slogans. And that is, I think, one of the problems for her is what exactly was she saying to voters.
And CBSNews.com has a similar article that says the Clinton campaign was too corporate and adds a category called superdelegates. And I think this is worth exploring for just a minute because they did not behave the way Clinton expected. And when you think of it, the superdelegates and the Democratic primary voters really diverged in the last few months of the campaign. While Clinton seemed to be getting stronger and Obama weaker with primary voters since Ohio and Texas, while his support was weakening among white working class voters and white men in general, the remaining superdelegates, the party insiders, were overwhelmingly poised to break for Obama and just waiting for the primaries to end. And that's a very significant split.
I think that, you know, we can't finish this segment without talking for a minute about Mark Penn, her former top strategist and pollster. You know, Mark Penn was around during Monica Lewinsky. Mark Penn was is. You know, we all remember the famous Bill Clinton quote, depends what is. And he, you know, made a lot of decisions. Now, he was also, at the same time he was running Hillary Clinton's campaign, he was renovating his house and the head of a multinational public relations and lobbying firm. And he has been, it's been said in the campaign, that he's the one who, you know, made the decisions not to set up an organization after Tuesday, Super Tuesday. You know, a lot of the sort of more cynical side of the Clintons is attributed to coming from, you know, sort of that kind of analysis of the electorate that Mark Penn promotes. But Hillary Clinton chose him. She put her faith in him. He stayed with her all the way until right before Pennsylvania when he met with a lobbyist in favor of the Columbia Free Trade Agreement when she was against it. And that's when she lost him. But sort of, you know, at the same time that she was, you know, developing all these policy proposals and drawing all this sort of populist support, she was putting in her faith in someone who could be said to represent some of the things that she did not, you know, want to put forward as representing her candidacy.
Good point about Mark Penn. And I would say about the superdelegates, funny enough, I think these decisive superdelegates, the ones who made the difference, did just what they're supposed to do under the Democratic primary's wacky system. They took the greater long-term good of the party into account as they saw it. And they decided in general, I think, that his coalition is more the future of the party than hers, that he rolled up all these under 30s across racial lines, and that he developed this new grassroots-based fundraising model that boggled everyone's minds with the amount of cash it brought in and online. And ultimately, I think that's why superdelegates look beyond the trend of the last 3 months and whatever doubts they may have had about his strength versus hers against McCain. Does your reporting jive with that? We've got about 30 seconds left.
Yes, it does. I mean, I think that the superdelegates, you know, ended up being the ace in Obama's hole, not the ace in Clinton's hole that she thought they were going to be.
All right. Two reminders. If you just can't get enough of this kind of thing, Andrea Bernstein and I will be back tomorrow right around noon to bring you Hillary Clinton's official campaign exit speech. Andrea will be with the senator in D.C., and I'll be here. See you then, Andrea.
See you then.
And then
we're going to rest.
Then we're going to, you may go on vacation. I'm not right away. But on the New York, I also will be on the New York One Reporters Roundtable talking about the race at around 7:30 and 10:30 tonight, if you're interested. All right, we go out, and we're going to talk about a new movie with that opens tonight about the lives of Chinese takeout delivery men in New York. But we go out with something appropriate to the moment that Hillary Clinton said in the February 1st debate in Austin.
No matter what happens in this contest, and I am honored to be here with Barack Obama. I am absolutely honored. And, you know, whatever happens, we're going to be fine. You know, we have strong support from our families and our friends. I just hope that we'll be able to say the same thing about the American people. And that's what this election should be about.